This is Matt Wells at UN News. It's been 15 years since the terrorist attack on the UN compound at the Canal Hotel in Baghdad. The darkest day in our lives at the United Nations, in the words of the Secretary General at the time, Kofi Annan. The truck bomb killed 22 international and local staff, including the top UN representative in Iraq, Sergio Vieira de Mello. Current and former staff who survived the blast on the 19th of August 2003 have been reflecting on the tragedy, which marked the first time the UN was deliberately targeted on a massive scale. The bomb upended the office where Darko Mochibob was working, leaving him with cuts on his head and shoulders, which were stitched up without the benefit of anaesthesia. Having lived through the war in his native Bosnia, the senior UN official drew from that experience to cope in the aftermath of losing so many treasured colleagues, many of whom had become friends. But for years, he held on to the lacerated jacket he was wearing that day.
I am Darko Mochibob. I'm currently deputy director in the Department of Political Affairs in the Middle East and West Asia division that specifically covers countries like Iraq. I have been working in and on Iraq for a very long time. The very first terrorist attack in Iraq with the use of what they call the vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, which is a rather complicated technical name for a car bomb, happened just 1 week prior to the Canal Hotel bombing. It happened in front of the Jordanian embassy, and it was a bit of a wake-up call, but there was still no realization that UN could become a direct target of similar attack. On the day of 19th of August, I was attending some meetings in the morning, and after lunch, I returned to headquarters, which was buzzing with UN staff. We were coming in ever greater numbers, trying to help with the post-war situation as much as we could. My task at that time related to Oil for Food program, we're trying to maintain and restart the pipeline with the key commodities, including food and medicines. My last recollection before the blast, which happened just after 3 p.m., was being on the phone and talking to my colleague here in New York. And I was sitting with my back to the window on the side of the explosion. So I do not personally recall the moment of the blast, because I lost consciousness completely. My colleague in New York could just hear the line being cut off, but nothing else. And then less than half an hour later, the breaking news appeared, on the screens worldwide. As I was coming back, slowly, it may sound almost funny now, but my first thought was, what happened? Did my computer explode? Because the entire room was a bit of a mess, with the computer on one side, the chair on top of me, the desk was turned over, and with a lot of dust. But I was obviously not processing the gravity of the situation at that moment, also because we did not expect, as I said, that something like that would happen. So it took a while to realize, I was quite dazed, from the blast, and I had, which I couldn't even feel at that time, some injuries from the flying glass, including on my head and my shoulders. And then the rescue operation started, and the colleagues who were not injured, and the rescuers started coming in, checking the offices and slowly taking us out. Within next hour, I was still on the premises with some first aid applied. Given the number of the injured, there was not enough medical material, the bandages in particular. So colleagues were actually tearing up bed sheets to apply first aid. So after about an hour, although I realized I was bleeding, from the injuries, I was still able to move around a bit. And as it's customary in situations with large number of wounded, they were doing the triage and directing the wounded to different evacuation routes depending on the seriousness of their injuries. Because I was classified as the walking wounded, I was directed to an ambulance, the awaiting ambulances, which were Iraqi ambulances. And with a couple of other colleagues, I was taken to a nearby hospital where a local doctor informed me that, I had a number of cuts and he would have to do stitching of these injuries. And So at that point, the doctor informed me that they will do the stitching, but they didn't have any anesthetic. So then that was probably physically the most painful memory of that day, because I could feel, you know, the stitching without anesthetic. So once that passed, we were directed a group of victims with head injuries for overnight observation to another hospital. And I'm particularly grateful to one national staff colleague who actually came there. He was not working that day, but he found his way to a hospital to see how he could be helpful. Now, and he actually spent the night looking for me now, after we were moved to another hospital, to bring me some clothes. A little by little, I was beginning to realize the magnitude of that. As I would see more colleagues, you know, they would bring the news of this colleague, of that colleague being seriously wounded or being killed, which was psychologically the most difficult part. The following day after the release, we were taken back to Canal Hotel to try to retrieve some of our private property. And even though my office at the time was on the side of the blast, it was further down that little road where the suicide bomber took his truck. So the office was damaged, but it did not collapse, like the corner of the building where, unfortunately, was also the office of Sergio Vieira de Mello. So I was able to actually retrieve my suit jacket. It was still on the back of the chair I was sitting in, but because of the flying glass, you know, my jacket looked like somebody took a razor and cut the back of it. For a few years, I actually kept it, you know, and then at one point decided to let go of both the jacket and, I guess, of that terrible memory of it. Well, I took some time off, but not as long as the organization allowed me to. You know, I actually was eager to come back to work. And once I started feeling better, you know, I was eager to come back to the office, connect with friends, and I think that helped a great deal, you know. How I cope with this, you know, I think among us who were in Baghdad and who lived through that day, you know, there was a different level of the psychological trauma. What helped me personally was the fact that I lived through another war in Bosnia, in my own country. And also I had some familiarity with my injuries. I'm a medical doctor by training, so that helped too. And also the attitude, you know, how you decide to develop your mindset after that, you know. I actually was not too seriously injured. The wounds were superficial, although they looked dramatic on a day of it, because my head was bleeding heavily, but they were still superficial and they were healing quickly. By comparison with the colleagues who lost their lives, or those who had much more serious and lasting injuries, I considered myself lucky. In general, there were, of course, those in Iraq and in many other locations where we operate. There are those who do not like the UN, and who would even, you know, organize such atrocities and attacks directly against the UN. But by and large, in my experience, you know, in Middle East and even in my home country from the war in the early 90s, by and large, the population appreciates the attention and having somebody who will hear their voice and extend a helping hand. I was in a position to read, actually, interview with one of the people involved in the planning of this, and he was expressing no regrets. But in his mind, the United Nations was part of the aggression against his country, how he saw it. The ones that I often think about, you know, and I've been back to Iraq many times after the bombing, are our national staff. Some of them who worked with me, they still work for the United Nations there, and they have also been through difficult periods. You know, they take enormous risks. Whenever I go, you know, I make sure that I set aside some time, you know, while I'm in Baghdad in particular, to talk to the ones I've known this part, to see how they were doing and so on. Because they too were the victims. Several of those who died were national staff. And several of those with severe wounds and consequences for life, they still need support. And I do hope that the UN will continue supporting them in every way possible.